Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Caroline Masner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Bella, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop. But this workshop is being done in collaboration with the Lymphoma Foundation of America. So we're partnering with them on today's program. And you'll be hearing from Belita, whose voice you just heard, later on in the program, and we're delighted to be partnering with them. We partner with them on every lymphoma program that we do. And today's program is supported by Gemneb, Kite Pharma Inc., a subsidiary of Gilead Sciences Inc., and a grant from Ipsen Biopharmaceuticals Inc. I really want to thank them for their support of today's program. Now, before we launch into introducing our first speaker, I'd like to do a few things. First of all, I'd like to let you know that there are over 101 participants on the call today, and you come from all of the United States, from urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Lebanon, the Philippines, Uganda, and the United Kingdom. So this is truly a global call. And it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us learning about updates on follicular lymphoma. And now, I'm going to introduce our first speaker, and our first speaker is Dr. Sarah Rutherford, and Dr. Rutherford is the John P. Leonard, M.D., Gewurztman Family Research Scholar in Lymphoma, Assistant Professor of Medicine while at Cornell Medical College, Cornell University. And Dr. Rutherford will be addressing an overview of follicular lymphoma, treatment options for newly diagnosed, treatment options for relapsed refractory disease, the importance of healthcare communication, key questions to ask your healthcare team. It's really my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Rutherford.
Thank you so much, Dr. Masner, and I'm really excited to talk to you all today. There have been so many great developments in follicular lymphoma over the last 5 years or so, and Dr. Merriam and I are going to share that with you today. Follicular lymphoma is the most common indolent or slow-growing lymphoma. One of the most common presentations of this disease is with swollen lymph nodes. For example, a person might feel some swelling in the neck in the absence of other symptoms. Sometimes we find enlarged lymph nodes when we are doing radiologic studies for other reasons. For example, I frequently meet patients after they've had mammograms for regular breast cancer screening, and they've been found to have swollen lymph nodes under their arm. Other times people do present with symptoms like fatigue, shortness of breath, or weight loss. When lymphoma is suspected, it is important that a biopsy be done in order to diagnose the disease accurately. In the U.S., we typically do an imaging test of the body, ideally a PET and CT scan together, which will then confirm exactly where the disease is at baseline, and that helps us to, first of all, find out the right place, the best place to biopsy if we haven't already gotten a diagnosis, or later if we decide the treatment is indicated, it will help us assess the response to treatment. The majority of patients with follicular lymphoma have what is called advanced stage disease, and that typically means that disease is in more than one place, often above and below the diaphragm, which is what separates the chest from the abdomen. And I really emphasize to not focus on stage in this disease. It really doesn't typically have an impact on patients' prognoses, and so we don't focus so much on that. Now, if follicular lymphoma is confirmed, the next step is to determine whether treatment is indicated. Some potential indications for treatment include fatigue if it's thought to be related to the disease, decreased blood counts, large size of lymph nodes, or weight loss. But in the absence of symptoms, patients can often be monitored, sometimes for years, even without treatment. And I'm just thinking of a patient who I met about 10 years ago who had had a follicular lymphoma diagnosis found after he had an imaging test for a kidney stone. and there was a lymph node there that was biopsied. And I just saw him about a month ago, and he's had no treatment, and this whole time has remained doing very well. And so, or while I could have given him aggressive treatment at the beginning of the time I knew him, he would still be doing just as well now without any treatment. And it's important to note that early aggressive treatment in this disease has never been shown to make people live longer. And especially now that we have so many new therapies coming out, it is in with the patient's best interest to actually try to hold off on treatment unless it's clearly indicated. Our goal is really to keep people feeling as well as possible for as long as possible and to preserve their quality of life. People with follicular lymphoma tend to live for many years. If treatment is indicated, the approach really needs to be tailored to the individual patient. One strategy that I favor in many situations is actually the drug called rituximab, R-I-T-U-X-I-M-A-B, which is really a cornerstone of the treatment of B-cell lymphomas. It is considered a targeted therapy that binds specifically to the lymphomas through a protein on their surface called CD20. And when given as a single agent just by itself, it can be administered weekly for 4 weeks. I just met an 86-year-old man in the hospital who had some symptoms, but not dramatic symptoms, and so we've decided to give him this treatment. During the first dose, a shaking, chill-like reaction can happen. The nurses that are used to giving this drug have been using it for about 20 years and are very used to dealing with this type of issue. That reaction does not typically occur with subsequent doses. And really the other main side effect is it can mildly increase the risk of infection. But overall, this is a very well-tolerated strategy that I use often in patients who I think need treatment. And I want to mention that we encourage our patients to receive vaccines against COVID-19, flu, and RSV prior to starting treatment, given the increased risk of infection. Sometimes people are quite symptomatic from follicular lymphoma. For example, I had a patient a couple years ago who came in with a very low red blood cell count due to the disease, and he was tired from that and required transfusion support. And so in that case, we want to try to give a treatment that's going to work more quickly. The rituximab treatment I told you about can take sometimes a couple months or even longer to have its full effect. And so when patients are quite symptomatic, we tend to use a chemotherapy drug called bendamustine along with the rituximab. And that's usually given 2 days in a row every 4 weeks for a six-month course. That drug is generally well-tolerated. It can have some side effects like increased infection risk, fatigue, mild nausea, and rash. And I do want to note that Dr. Merriman is going to tell you more about a new type treatment that is being studied in clinical trials in newly diagnosed patients or untreated patients that we're both really excited about for our patients in the future. So once a person finishes their treatment course, they tend to then go back into a follow-up mode. Most of the time, people have very good responses to treatment, and hopefully the disease goes into a remission. And then for my practice is to follow patients every 3 months, at least at first, and see them in the clinic and do lab tests, physical exam. And I'll talk about this a bit at the end, but it's very important that people with any type of lymphoma, any cancer in general, keep in close touch with your physician and let them know of any new issues that come up in the interim between visits. I will tell you that I really favor monitoring patients closely without a set imaging plan. So, like, for example, I told you about the patient who's been I've been following for 10 years, and he hadn't needed any treatment. We actually went about 9 years without any imaging test, and we just did one recently, and it was completely stable compared to 10 years ago. But if someone does start having some concerning symptoms, say pain or weight loss, we would typically do a PET CT scan in their surveillance course after treatment, or if they're being followed without treatment. And then we would typically want to re-biopsy, do another biopsy of the most active appearing lymph node. So if someone has been found to have what we call a relapse of the follicular lymphoma, the next type of treatment to give them really depends on what was given before, how long ago it was, and what the goals are for their treatment. So I have had cases where patients have relapsed a few years after originally receiving rituximab as a single agent, And so sometimes I've given that again. If they hadn't already received the chemotherapy bendamustine, I may consider doing that in a relapse situation. Again, Dr. Merriman is going to tell you more about clinical trials. And I think it, particularly in this disease, clinical trials are really helpful, and they often give patients access to new treatments that may be more effective than what's already FDA approved. There is actually an oral therapy called lenalidomide, or Revlimid is the brand name of it, and that's actually FDA approved. It can be given, there are data to support giving it in a newly diagnosed patient or an untreated patient with follicular lymphoma, but more commonly it's used in patients who've already had chemotherapy like bendamustine and rituximab. And this is an oral drug that's given in a course of 3 weeks on, 1 week off, often for about a year. It can cause fatigue and low blood counts, but it actually is very well tolerated overall. I do want to note that occasionally we consider use of a chemotherapy regimen called R-CHOP. The R is the rituximab that I've been talking about throughout the session, and the CHOP includes three other chemotherapy drugs plus prednisone. And this is standardly a treatment for faster-growing lymphomas, but sometimes we think that it's the right treatment for someone with follicular lymphoma, and it is a more intense treatment than the others I've been talking about, but it often gives patients long remissions if it is used. There are a number of other newly approved treatments for people with follicular lymphoma who've already received two prior lines of therapy, and they include immunotherapy approaches of chimeric antigen receptor T cells and also bispecific antibodies. These two types of treatments are similar in that they help the body's immune system to better fight the lymphoma. And I think Dr. Merriman may talk more about them, but I'll just briefly tell you that in CAR T cell therapy, blood is collected from a patient and then sent to a company who manufactures the T cells, that's part of your immune system, to better be able to recognize the lymphoma cells. Usually takes a few weeks for this process to occur, and then the cells are reinfused back into the patient. This part often requires admission to the hospital for a week or so. And there's some side effects that we monitor for very closely, and one of them is called cytokine release syndrome, which is an inflammatory response that appears similar to the body's response to infection. For example, it can cause fevers. And so that typically resolves completely if it happens, but I do want to mention that this is a more aggressive treatment, and it tends to be used more in faster-growing lymphomas, although we're very happy to have it as an option for follicular lymphoma too. But I think the type of therapy that I just mentioned called bispecific antibody actually plays a larger role and will play a larger role in follicular lymphoma. And it can have some of the same side effects as CAR T-cell therapy, but they tend to be what we call lower grade or milder. And so I think that that's particularly favored in older patients. These bispecific antibodies bind to both B cells and T cells from our immune system. And again, I think Dr. Merriman will tell you more about these. We're really excited to have these as options for patients who have already received two or more lines of therapy for follicular lymphoma. And I think he will tell you more about the study of those drugs in newly diagnosed or untreated patients. Finally, I'm going to address key questions to ask your care team. And I think I've brought this up already, but I think the key to a really optimal management of follicular lymphoma is when you and your physician and your medical team are in very close touch about it, different issues that arise. So I think that the main point I want to make is that feel comfortable asking any question. You should feel open and feel like you can, even if you think maybe it's not relevant to the follicular lymphoma, I think it's really important that you have a level of comfort with your team to ask whatever you feel like you need to know. I would say the most important part of this whole process is making sure that the diagnosis is accurate. And so I would really ask your doctor, make sure that they feel like that diagnosis is accurate when you first meet them. There are times when diagnoses can be complicated, and, for example, you can send slides to the National Institute of Health for review if there's a discrepancy, or you can feel comfortable getting a second opinion too, if you feel like that will make you feel more confident. And then I think for follicular lymphoma, another key question is understanding why or why not treatment is indicated. I mentioned that there can be patients followed for many years without treatment. So I think getting an understanding of that, and if you're not being treated, what symptoms to watch out for. And then finally, this will be a good introduction to Dr. Merriman, is that you should ask about clinical trials, whether or not you're going to be getting treatment. I've already said this before, but there are often clinical trials that will enable you to get access to treatments that wouldn't be approved otherwise, and often those could be better tolerated and more effective than the standard of care treatment. Thank you so much for your attention today. It has been a very exciting time as a lymphoma doctor and researcher with so many new treatments available for follicular lymphoma specifically. I look forward to hearing from Dr. Merriman, and then we will answer your questions at the end.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Rutherford. That was just a stellar, a superb presentation. And actually, as the first speaker, you've really set the stage for today's program. And I know there will be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Reed Merriman. And Dr. Merriman is Director, Follicular Lymphoma Center, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Instructor in Medicine, Harvard Medical School. And Dr. Merriman will be addressing clinical trial updates, how research increases treatment options, new and emerging treatments, factors that may affect treatment planning, managing and preventing treatment side effects, discomfort, pain, and quality of life, and guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Merriman.
Thank you for that introduction, and thank you, Dr. Rutherford, for the excellent overview of first and second line treatment for FL. So I'll start by talking about clinical trials. I think we're really fortunate as doctors who treat follicular lymphoma to have really good standard of care options for most patients with follicular lymphoma. But even so, I think a clinical trial is often the best treatment option for many patients. I think a lot of patients think of clinical trials, or at least many patients, think of clinical trials as something that's available kind of as a last resort when other options are no longer available. But I hope to convince you today that you should think about the clinical trial even if you haven't received treatment yet for your follicular lymphoma. So you may hear about different phases of clinical trials, phase one, two, and three. Those phases have generally have different goals. So phase one trials are the earliest. Those seek to establish the safety of a drug or a drug combination. Phase two trials, the goal of those is to establish that they're efficacious, that they work. And then phase three trials are the ones generally where they're randomized, where you're comparing a new treatment versus a previous standard treatment to see if the new treatment is in fact better than what we were using before. Because we have so many different good standard of care options for follicular lymphoma, even randomized trials, there's really no placebo involved, and you'd be getting a good active drug. So for that reason, trials, like I said before, are a good option to consider. So trials often give you, as Dr. Rutherford said, access to effective therapies sooner than would otherwise be available. These new treatments might be better tolerated than previous treatments or currently available treatments. So, you know, we have a lot of targeted therapies and immunotherapies that seem to have a better toxicity profile than the chemotherapies that we've been using for a long time. For some patients, finances can come into play. So if you have a drug that has a high copay, sometimes a clinical trial makes drugs available at lower cost, not always. Another thing just to mention is that, you know, you may have seen your oncologist and they may not have mentioned clinical trials. So I think a good time to seek a second opinion, if that's the case, is when you're thinking about starting a new therapy. I think that's really an excellent time to go to a larger center. If you're at a center that doesn't have trials, where you can talk about the different standard of care treatment options, talk about different trials, and you can, you know, ask the oncologist that you see, you know, what they like about a trial, what would they change about a trial, what trial do they wish they would have open right now for you. I think those would be good questions as you're trying to understand the trials that you have as options. So Dr. Rutherford already mentioned that treatment for follicular lymphoma is changing in an excited way. We've seen approvals for multiple drugs in the last 5 years or so. And now that we have these drugs that are generally approved for patients who've already received multiple lines of therapy for their FL, we're seeing lots of trials that are moving those active drugs into earlier lines of therapy. So right now, at last count, there were more than a dozen. I think there are 17 randomized trials that are looking to incorporate new drugs into either first or second line treatment for patients with follicular lymphoma. So I'm not going to try to go through all of those, but I'll give you some themes. So one of the big themes is this class of drugs called bispecific antibodies. As the name suggests, these bispecific antibodies have two targets. Most of them target CD3, which is a protein on the surface of T cells. T cells are your body's killer cells that kill things that shouldn't be there, part of your immune system. So CD3 is one target. The other, for most of the bispecifics, is CD20, which is a protein that's on the surface of follicular lymphoma cells and some other B-cell lymphomas. So right now we have two bispecific antibodies approved for third-line treatment, mosunetuzumab and epcoritamab, and there's another bispecific antibody called odronextamab that's also in development. So there are multiple trials that are actually testing those drugs as either part of second-line therapy or even part of first-line therapy. So why would we want to move these drugs earlier on? I think most of these drugs are being tested in a chemotherapy-free way, a chemotherapy-free regimen, which is attractive for a few reasons. One, it allows us to avoid some of the acute side effects of chemotherapy, you know, like nausea and fatigue and things like that. But we also worry about long-term side effects of chemotherapy in terms of immune suppression, risk of infections. So I think there's excitement that these new drug regimens, if they're better than our current standards, could provide both more effective and also safer treatments for patients with follicular lymphoma. So that's one theme. Another theme is that we have a longer and longer list of targeted drugs that are approved for patients with relapsed follicular lymphoma. So these tend to be pill drugs that are distinct from chemotherapy, and they have a very specific target. So there's a drug called tazemetostat that targets EZH2 that's approved, and a drug called zanubrutinib that targets a protein called BTK. And then we have a few cell mods like lenalidomide and a newer version called golcadomide that are also being developed. So there's a number of trials that are moving those drugs into earlier lines of therapy as well. So without going into, you know, more and more detail, that's not even a full list. There are degrader drugs. These drugs actually work in a different way to break down the targets that are important for follicular lymphoma growth in a novel way compared to those other targeted drugs. So as I said, it's a really exciting time to be developing new therapies for follicular lymphoma, and I think, you know, it's a good time, relatively speaking, to have follicular lymphoma because you have so many new options. And, you know, if you're thinking about starting a new therapy, you should get the whole picture and understand what clinical trial options might be available for you. So now moving on to side effects and quality of life. I think quality of life is super important for follicular lymphoma. So we know that we can't cure this disease, at least not for most patients. The exception would be the small fraction of patients who present with stage 1 or stage 2 disease who are candidates for radiation. But for most patients, this is a chronic disease that they'll live with. But that being said, we manage follicular lymphoma very well, and most patients will die with rather than from their follicular lymphoma. And that's always the goal that I share with patients when I meet them for the first time. So with that, if we're treating a chronic disease that you're going to have for years and years, you know, the quality of life, the side effects of treatment are really important. And I think, honestly, that's something that we haven't done a good enough job as lymphoma investigators of comparing the quality of life of different treatment options, and that's something that we're trying to do better. So discussions of side effects when you meet with your oncologist are really important, but those discussions are actually pretty challenging because trial drugs and standard of care drugs have many many potential side effects, which can be hard to explain to patients in a short period of time and can be overwhelming for patients. I always try to communicate the most common side effects and also the side effects that could be severe or life-threatening, which are generally rare. It's important to communicate both of those different types of side effects. And I think if you're getting overwhelmed, a good question I encourage patients to ask is ask their doctor, what are the one or two side effects that patients complain about most when you treat them with this regimen? Because I think that gives you a sense of what's likely going to be your experience. And then also ask, what are the scary things that I should that are rare but could be life-threatening for me? And then lastly, how to prepare for telehealth and telemedicine appointments. So these appointments, I think, are very convenient for patients, but they are a little bit harder. I think it's harder to really establish a relationship with someone over Zoom. And then one thing that I like to do anytime I'm having a detailed conversation when I first meet a patient or when we're talking about starting a new treatment is I like to take notes for patients because I find that it's really helpful so that they can listen and they don't have to worry about how to spell mosunetuzumab. But obviously, you can't take notes on a Zoom call. So one piece of advice I would have is that you have someone else with you on your Zoom call who can take notes so that you can listen. I think in a way that's actually more important for telehealth calls than it is for in-person calls because it's harder for us to give you either a handwritten information sheet or other pamphlets that we might have available that you can take home with you. And then I think it's important, I always encourage my patients to take notes at home. People always say that as soon as they leave the office, they think of like six questions that they didn't ask you, which is very normal. So I'd encourage you to make a list of questions. And then this is a key part, I would encourage you to prioritize those questions. I always try to answer all the questions that a patient comes with, but my answer to question 1, 2, and 3, those answers are going to be better than to questions 13, 14, and 15. So really think about what are the key questions that I want to focus on because there's, you know, limited time and we should focus on those more. So in summary, I think clinical trials are important across cancer, but I think right now for follicular lymphoma, given the advances we've seen and the new treatment options we have available, clinical trials are really important. And I think they're important because we are likely going to see some significant changes in the way we treat follicular lymphoma. And participating in clinical trials allows you to be at the forefront of those changes, which we hope will not only improve outcomes for follicular lymphoma patients, but also improve the safety profile of our treatments and improve quality of life for patients who are on those newer treatments. So I think it's a really exciting time, and I think I'll stop there, and I look forward to answering your questions.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Merriman. What a wonderful presentation, stellar presentation, and clearly you covered a lot of important issues. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Lolita Cowan, and Ms. Cowan is President of Lymphoma Foundation of America. And Ms. Cowan will be addressing practical and psychosocial support to cope with follicular lymphoma, Lymphoma Foundation of America's free programs and services, and patient helpline, as well as a website. So she'll give you lots of information about how to contact them. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Cowan, who is also the organization, Lymphoma Foundation of America is a collaborating a partner organization on today's program. Ms. Cowan.
Mesner, for inviting us to partner with Cancer Care. Lymphoma Foundation of America is a national cancer charity that provides services and programs for lymphoma patients. Please know that if you are a patient, we are here to help you. For example, Lymphoma Foundation of America gives travel aid to lymphoma patients to help with your transportation costs to and from your doctor appointments and cancer treatments. And when you contact us, our goal is to help you better understand your situation so you can make informed decisions about your health care. Our phone number is 734-424-2000. and we welcome family members to contact us also to learn how to help as a caregiver and patient advocate. We will also give you a list of nonprofit organizations that can provide financial assistance with prescription drugs, medical supplies, insurance premiums, legal help, and family assistance for pediatric patients. Lymphoma Foundation of America gives grants and awards to cancer researchers who are dedicated to finding a cure for lymphoma and who are developing new treatments and studying environmental causes of lymphoma. Please visit our website, www.lymphomahelp.org, for information on second opinions, clinical trials, lymphoma diagnosis and staging, and of course, there are inspirational stories from people who are sharing their journey back to health. Social support has long been recognized as an important contributing factor to a person's well-being. I'd like to say a few words about the psychological and social benefits of peer support groups for lymphoma patients. If you are currently a patient, a support group may help you in many ways. A recently published study in the Journal of Psychological and Social Dimensions of Cancer found that peer support groups provide three main benefits for patients. The first is empowerment. Patients reported feeling more in control over what was happening to them. Two, information sharing. Patients said that they learned firsthand about coping skills and practical ideas for addressing problems with employment, health insurance, financial issues, transportation, and family matters, especially if you have children. And third, emotional support. Patients said that they felt less alone or judged and less fearful. They appreciated the opportunity to talk openly and honestly about their treatment experiences and challenges. Most cancer centers offer professionally led support groups, and many organizations, including Cancer Care, offer online and in-person support groups for patients and caregivers. The Cancer Support Community and Gilda's Clubs have peer support in most major cities in our country. Having a support network of your peers can help you gain the self-confidence you will need to make decisions along your journey to recovery. It has been my pleasure to speak with you today, and thank you, Dr. Messner and Cancer Care, for the excellent information we've heard from Dr. Rutherford and Dr. Merriman. And I'd like to conclude by giving you an inspirational story. The gentleman here at the Lymphoma Foundation of America, who is our program manager, was diagnosed with follicular lymphoma in 1986. He entered a clinical trial at the National Cancer Institute, and after the trial was over, he was in remission. He never had a relapse. 25 years after he entered the clinical trial, the doctors at the National Cancer Institute said, "You don't have to continue coming back for follow-up." And they used the word cure. So he was diagnosed at age 42, and today he's alive and well at age 80. And I wanted to share with you and wish you all, if you are in treatment, to have a healthy and long life.
Ms. Cowan, what a wonderful, inspirational story, and all the services that you offered and all the support that you offered to our participants. And I should let you all know that you're going to get a SurveyMonkey evaluation in about a week after the program. And in that it's an evaluation of the program, but you'll also be getting all the resources that have been mentioned by Ms. Cowan and by anyone else on the program as well. So you'll get lots of information as well. And I'm just want to say a few words about Cancer Care Services. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization, and we provide free programs and services to people, primarily provided by oncology social workers throughout the United States. We have a Hope Line, 800-813-4673, and many people call, and the Hope Line is answered by oncology social workers. There is no wait time because they're all assigned to the Hope Line at different times, but they're free to pick up the phone and answer it. And people often call with specific requests. They might need help with transportation for treatment or practical assistance, or they might need help with joining a support group or a peer support group, or they might an online support group. So there are a lot of different services that one can access from Cancer Care. And you can just visit our website at www.cancercare.org, and at that point you'll be able to see all the services that we offer, and you can request as many of the services that you would benefit from. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A, and I'm going to ask Bella to explain to you how to queue up for questions. Bella?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
And we have a question for Dr. Rutherford. Will the goal ever be to cure follicular lymphoma? Why or why not?
That is an excellent question, and I'm so glad that someone asked that. And actually, Dr. Merriman and I just wrote a paper together on behalf of a number of other lymphoma doctors and researchers, and we are starting to think about a cure for follicular lymphoma. And, you know, the definition of that, I think, is complex and maybe different than some other diseases. But we are so excited about these new therapies that we've talked about and sort of the newer versions to come of them. And we do think that there may be a point where we can say that some patients can be cured of follicular lymphoma. And we are so happy that is something that may be on the horizon for patients.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. And another question for Dr. Merriman. Extending time to next treatment has been a great goal. Do you see any new therapies which are also extending overall survival, please?
It's a good question. So there haven't been a lot of trials that have actually shown an improvement in overall survival for follicular lymphoma, and that's in part because patients, even without these new therapies, you know, live for a very long time. So you have to follow patients for a very long time to actually see an improvement in overall survival. I think, you know, rituximab, which was introduced over 20 years ago, improved overall survival in some studies. I'm optimistic that these bispecific antibodies, which, you know, they have the same target, CD20, and they're immunotherapy drugs. We know that follicular lymphoma is a very immune-sensitive tumor. I'm optimistic that those drugs could improve survival outcomes for follicular lymphoma patients. But to know that, we'll probably need 20, 25 years. You know, we need a long time because patients with follicular lymphoma do so well. So it's kind of a good problem to have. But I am optimistic that some of these new drugs that we mentioned today could really change the way we think about outcomes, long-term outcomes for FL patients.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And a question, Dr. Rutherford. I had BR and R maintenance for first-line treatment and have had a CR for 18 months now. Yay. My lymphocytes tanked and have not thoroughly recovered. For any relapsed refractory treatments, would low lymphocyte counts influence options, please?
That's a great question. Yeah, I'm going to... Yeah, I actually didn't talk about this specifically, but there are many different trials in follicular lymphoma, and some of them would give patients the set amount of treatment for 6 months, and others would keep people on the rituximab or another similar drug called obinutuzumab. And so the reality is probably the part of the reason why your lymphocyte count or a person's lymphocyte count would stay low for a while after treatment would be because of the extra rituximab you received. And that will likely maintain you in a remission longer, ultimately for having had the extra rituximab, but it can put you more at risk for infection. So I would just be, you know, make sure that you're in really close touch with your physician with any symptoms or signs of infection. And then, you know, I, as far as I am aware, I've never seen the lymphocyte count being an exclusion for trials, because I think that was the second question, was if that was going to be a problem for future trials. And I don't think that's the case. But if you're still on the maintenance rituximab, I would ask your doctor to reconsider that, because it sounds like, you know, now the count is remaining low. But bottom line is you have received standard of care treatment, and I think that you have all the options available for you in the future as well. And hopefully it'll be a long time before you need anything else.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And another question from Dr. Merriman, is there any evidence on treating follicular lymphoma early and improved long-term outcomes? Is watch and wait still preferred?
Yeah, it's a key question. So there have been multiple randomized trials that have looked at that question. Do we benefit patients by giving them treatments earlier on? Some of those trials have tested chemotherapy. Some of them have tested rituximab therapy. And none of the trials have shown an improvement in overall survival. We can't make patients live longer by giving treatment sooner. We can delay the need for chemotherapy. So if you start with rituximab alone, you can delay the need for chemo a little bit longer compared to watchful waiting. So because of that, I generally am a fan of watchful waiting. I think having treatment-free time for patients is really good. And obviously, you're not going to make patients feel better by giving them treatment. So I think in terms of quality of life, watchful waiting makes a lot of sense to me. There are new trials that are looking at this patient population, patients who have a low tumor burden who are otherwise candidates for watchful waiting. So, for example, we're participating in a vaccine trial, which is kind of cool, that they've developed an anti-cancer vaccine that really has very few side effects, and maybe by giving a vaccine, we could delay the need for future therapy. There are also trials that are comparing treatment with rituximab to treatment with mosunetuzumab, which is one of those new bispecific antibodies for patients who have low tumor burden follicular lymphoma who would be candidates for watchful waiting. So there's some question if, you know, using those newer drugs, the bispecific antibodies, could improve outcomes. But I think watchful waiting is still a very good option for patients in that situation.
Excellent. Thank you. And another question for Dr. Rutherford, is there a certain time period where transformation is likely to happen?
So we didn't talk about this specifically, but I'll just very briefly mention that any slow-growing lymphoma has a small chance of transforming into a faster-growing lymphoma. And I really urge people not to focus on that because it is a rare phenomenon, but just to be another reason to keep in close touch with your physician, which you should be doing anyway. So Dr. Messner, can you repeat that exact question that was asked? Focused on transformation and forgot the exact question.
So what factors are considered when planning treatment after relapse?
So I mean, I would say that's one of the reasons I mentioned the R-CHOP treatment. So sometimes there's when we meet a new patient, we're not sure that they may have a faster growing component to the lymphoma. And in that time, we usually treat with R-CHOP, which is the standard treatment for the most common fast growing lymphoma called diffuse large B-cell. But I want to just urge you all to remember this, that even with these faster-growing lymphomas, we also, like even if Dr. Merriman and I were going, giving you a talk today, giving a session on diffuse large B-cell, we've also seen just amazing strides in that disease too in terms of treatment options and patients living longer and better. And a lot of the same type treatments I mentioned, like the CAR T-cell therapy and the bispecific antibodies, are used in those disease, in that disease and faster growing lymphomas. And so, you know, sometimes it's helpful to use, and like, for example, one of the bispecific antibodies that's FDA approved is called epcoritamab, is FDA approved in both follicular and diffuse large B cell, and some of the CAR T cell drugs are approved in both. And so, you know, in times when there might be some concern about a faster growing component, we thankfully we have really good drugs that, that target and work well in that type of disease too.
Thank you so much. And a question for Dr. Merriman. Can you offer any advice on navigating crowded areas like public transport? I have a lot of anxiety about getting sick while on treatment, but I can't always avoid large groups of people.
Yeah. I want to answer that question, but just I had one other thought on the transformation question. So it is an important question. So one of really the only way we can know if someone has transformed is by doing a biopsy. So I think if in doubt, a biopsy is a good idea for patients with follicular lymphoma because it can really give us confidence that we are treating the right thing and we're giving you the right treatment. So I always think if a patient has relapsed and we're thinking about starting a new line of therapy, I always think carefully about whether we could do a biopsy, and I try to do a biopsy each time if it's feasible to give us that confidence that we know what we're dealing with. And then infections are a major side effect for pretty much all of our treatments for follicular lymphoma, and I find I have patients on two extremes. I have some who aren't cautious enough in terms of avoiding infections, and then some people who are super, super cautious to the point where they don't see family members. And I try to encourage something in between. So I encourage people to avoid crowded places, especially if it's indoors. If you have to go to those places, I encourage you to wear a mask. We have good masks now. If you wear a KN95 or an N95 mask, even on a crowded subway, I think the likelihood that you're going to get sick is very low. So if you do need to be in crowded places, I would recommend that. My other advice is that you should avoid people who are sick. So if you're inviting family over, you should tell people, you know, I have cancer and I'm at risk for infection. So if you're not feeling well, don't come. And with those exceptions, I encourage people to live their life and to do things that are important to them. And if you're willing to wear a mask in a crowded area, there aren't actually that many limitations. You know, you can go to a wedding, you can go to a baptism, you can go out to eat with friends, you know, try to eat maybe outside if you can, especially with the nicer weather. But I think that avoiding infection doesn't mean that you can't live your life.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to now ask our speakers to provide takeaways. I'm going to ask to start with Dr. Merriman, if you could just provide a takeaway for our participants today.
Sure. So I think I mentioned this before, but follicular lymphoma treatment is changing, and I think we're really excited about the potential for these new drugs that have been approved, and we hope that they can improve outcomes for patients, both in terms of keeping them in remission for longer and with lower side effects and improving quality of life. And it lets us think a little bit about the potential for cure, although that's something that we need to keep working on.
Thank you so much, Dr. Merriman. And Dr. Rutherford?
I think that Dr. Merriman said that very well, and I would just echo the optimism we feel, rooted in very objective information that we've presented here of new treatments. And I think what I'm most excited is we've seen so much evolve for so many new treatments and new strategies for patients over the last 5 years that it's almost unimaginable where we're going to be in 5 years from now and 10 years from now. So again, just such a message of hope and optimism that the management is evolving quickly and patients are going to live longer and better lives who are diagnosed with follicular lymphoma. Thank you again for giving us this opportunity. We really enjoyed speaking with you all today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rutherford. And Ms. Cowan.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. I'd like to conclude by saying that there are so many cancer help organizations. Please feel free to reach out to any of us, and let us know how we can help you.
And remember, the help from all these organizations is free and available nationally, so please do take advantage of it. I want to thank our speakers. They've been phenomenal. I want to thank our participants for asking such great questions. Although we've done this program before, I have to say this has probably been the best one we've ever offered. A great deal of optimism has been presented to all of you, a lot of the new treatments. However, I do want to say a few things. For those of you who had a chance to ask a question, please take your question back to your treating healthcare team. Remember, they know you the best, and you've learned a lot from the program, and so ask your question of your healthcare team. And for those of you who didn't get to ask a question, but have a question you want to ask, go back to your healthcare team and ask them the question. Also, I just want to remind all of you that it seems that you're able to reach your healthcare team usually during the day, but evenings, weekends, and holidays are often challenging to reach someone. So always check with your healthcare team who's available on weekends, holidays, and evenings. Always check and see who's available. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.